We're on 30th August 76, and now we're talking with, now what is your first name?
Øystein.
Øystein Elgeroy,
yes.
On 30th August 76 at Grenoble. So can you tell me about the first radio astronomy in Norway?
Yes.
And how it got started?
We had an old observatory in Oslo, which was for stellar work, but this could be used no more. And then Professor Rosland decided to build a solar observatory. This observatory was completed in 1954. And at that time, one had instruments for optical observations of the sun, and also the first installations for radio observations of the sun. The idea being that one should combine these two methods of studying the sun.
Right. Now, whose idea was it to do the radio? Was it Rosland's?
It was, yes, in the first instance, Rosland's idea, I think. And he engaged an engineer, an electronic engineer, Mr. Eriksson, who is still in the institute.
Right.
And who made the first radiometer for observing the sun.
I see.
And he then had a radiometer working at 200 megahertz.
I see.
Which was being used for patrol work and also for special investigations.
Now, do you know of the main scientific results that came from this work before you yourself?
Yes, the first results were they were more general nature. I mean, tables of daily intensities of solar radio emission,
just
as was done at many other observatories. And then there was a solar eclipse in 1954, in
right,
June
1954. Right,
this
right.
One was observed both at the observatory, where it was not full, but partial. But there was also an expedition to Sandefjord, which is a bit south of Oslo, where the eclipse was observed.
I see.
And I think the people who took part in this was Eriksson, Tandberg, Hansen, Hauge.
I see.
And Hauge, he's also still in the institute. He had made the first, or he was undertaking the first investigations of solar bursts when I came to the institute in 1955.
In 55, I see.
Yes, I just finished my MSc in physics.
Right.
But I was interested in radio astronomy. I moved over as an assistant to Professor Rosner.
I see. And what was the first thing that you worked on when you were there?
Yes, Professor Rosner said to me, you have to do some routine work with the radiometer observatory, but then you're free to choose what interests you. And the thing which I immediately got interested in was noise storms and solar bursts. And so I looked in the literature and I found that it was indeed known about solar bursts. For instance, on U, that our bandwidth was very narrow, small bandwidth, but how large the bandwidth was, one didn't know very much about.
Right.
The duration of the burst was not very well known, and things like this. And then I decided, first instance, one could take two frequencies close to each other and see what happens. And so I built myself a two-channel receiver working around 200 megahertz. And the results from this receiver were quite interesting, because I found that the burst did not occur exactly at the same time in the two channels.
Right.
And I plunged into this at the Paris Symposium on Radio Astronomy.
Right.
Because I knew very little about the international meetings, and Rosland had been invited to the Paris Symposium on Radio Astronomy, and so he sent me.
Yeah.
And I was to give a paper there, and I met all these famous people. And I was a beginner, you see. I remember I was very, very much afraid
right.
when I first was talking about it.
Can you remember what were the, especially in the solar work, what were the exciting things that were being talked about at that time? What were the new things?
Oh, the new things in 58?
Yes,
oh, that
at the
was
Paris Symposium.
Oh, yes. That was the bursts observed by Weil and his group in Australia. The classification of bursts into the different types. And I think
but the
results which they had obtained at Marseille in France. They added, Weil had divided the bursts into three classes, and then at the symposium elaborated more the idea which had been proposed, been published a little bit before, but they had a fourth type
right.
four burst.
Right.
And also they came from Australia and told that there is still another which we call type 5. Yes. That was
anything else about that meeting that you remember in particular?
Yes, I remember the competition with the Dutch, between me and the Dutch investigators.
Yeah.
Not Fokker, but a fellow called Jager.
The Jager?
Not the Jager, but he died later on. He was presenting a paper with De Groot.
De Groot, yes.
He had written a paper, but it was presented by one of the other people there, Jager.
Right.
And we had some sort of internal competition.
I see.
Yeah.
Now, when you made this two-channel receiver at slightly different frequencies, mm-hmm. were you surprised to find that the flare came, the burst came on different times?
Yes, I also I found it highly interesting.
Because
I had hoped, more or less,
right.
that they should come at different times. And I think people might know, I published it in Nature. I was pleased that they did.
That was Nature in 57.
Right. I think it was, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
But it had been shown by the Australians that there were delays at different frequencies. Hadn't they shown that?
That's right, yes.
But
that regarded the very large bursts. And so my idea was to look for if something equal. Something like this happened in these small storm bursts,
I see.
Which are very minute things.
I see.
Then when I got this result that they didn't occur always at the same time, I made the first spectrofrequency receiver with really high resolution. And I think that was a very lucky idea, because the background was people had been using wideband spectrofrequency receivers. With a poor time and frequency resolution. And then I speculated, perhaps you take a high resolution receiver, that's taking a magnifying lens, looking at these events, and see what happens to these small storm bursts there. And then I verified the first findings, that they have some kind of frequency drifts, and they're small band waves.
Yeah. When did you build this swept frequency receiver?
I made the first one in 1957, I think. And there is a report. There is a report from the Institute of Theoretical Astrophysics.
I see.
Which mentions some of the first results, which are rather poor, and it was a receiver called a very narrow band. Then in 1958, in the autumn, I went to Dollar Bank to stay with the interferometry group there, doing long baseline interferometry.
Right.
Meanwhile, Ericsson, the electronics engineer, completed a new version of the swept frequency receiver, operating in the range from 180 to 200 megahertz. This range was then completely free of interfering signals at the time.
Right. And this is the one that's described in the article in Nature in 59? Well, actually, this one went from 190 to 215 megahertz.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes, you're right. Yes. When I say 180, we moved around a little bit, but
sure.
Yes, 190 and 215. That's,
but now, how long were you at Jodrell Bank?
I was there for 1 year. Yeah.
I see. Well, can you tell me what sort of atmosphere you found while you were at Jodrell Bank?
Oh, I found it rather different from what I had expected. Yes.
Why?
Because I thought I should come to a group which was immediately prepared to undertake radio astronomical observations. And I came to a group where they had great trouble with the equipment. So I spent most of the time doing electronics.
I see.
But of course, I was not satisfied with this, but I had expected to be put on an experiment which was more or less ready.
Right.
To join a group which was at the stage of becoming observers. So I was a little bit confused with this, perhaps.
Yeah.
But we came on the air and we did the observations just before I left the bank. But the atmosphere was quite interesting. Yes, I enjoyed the stage very much. It was a large center and people from many places.
Did you get to choose which group you joined, or was sort of assigned?
No, I was just put into it.
Yeah.
This was determined before I came there.
I see.
And of course, the big boss was the big boss at the time.
Right. Well, can you tell me about the early 60s? So you followed up this work that we've talked about so far.
Yes. At least. When I returned from Jodrell Bank, I really started observing with the high resolution radar spectrographs, or with the bomb we had at that time. And as very often happens when you have a new receiver or some new equipment, the first time you observe with it, something special happens.
And yes, right.
I was very fortunate to observe some very interesting fine structure in solar radiation, which then was described in that.
This is what you call pips.
Pips, that was normal type 1 burst. That was another name for, one thought type 1 burst, but there are stories. They were called storm bursts, and one had recorders with a time constant of 1 second, and so they choose lower time constants, and you resolve the burst into so that one peak could be resolved into several ones. And so some people called it peeps, and I remember Professor Witkiewicz, he expressed peeps. Yeah, people were smiling. And I didn't like the term peeps very much. I used it in my first papers.
Right.
And then Dr. Smurd from Australia,
right,
once visited Oslo. And we talked a little about this. And he said, I feel that peeps is a bit colloquial.
Yes, right. Yeah.
And that was just my feeling.
Right.
And so I decided I should never call it peeps anymore. I use the term second burst. When I have got some more observations from 1959 onwards, for a short time, I found that these small bursts could be classified. So I introduced a classification scheme for type 1 bursts.
I
found that the type 1 bursts have different properties. So really what you have, you can say you have a gross class of bursts, but it can be divided into subclasses, and this was done. And this was in my publication in Astrophysical Norwegian, which was my thesis for the doctor's degree in Norway.
Which year was this? This
was in 1961, I think.
Okay, yes. That's just beyond where.
Yes. Then the first spectra had already been published in Nature.
I had a question. Did you continue working closely with the optical astronomers right through the 60s, or did you get your own separate institute at some stage?
No, in fact, the cooperation with the optical people never was successful.
I see.
Reason is relatively simple. The weather conditions in Norway are not very good, and it doesn't happen very frequently that you have simultaneously something interesting on the sun, or optical observation conditions is a satisfactory and
observation. Right.
So that was one of the reasons. Another reason is that what the observed object at the time was the photosphere, chromosphere, and radio observations regarded much higher later. So some results emerged, so it was completely in vain.
Right. Well, unless you have some other... Have I missed anything that up till the early 60s? Thank you very much.
Yeah,
that ends the interview with Elgaroy on 30th August 76.